The 518th edition of the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is brought to you by Cut. Cut is a peer-to-peer social betting platform that's U.S.-based and available in 40 states. Head on over to Cut.com, that's K-U-T-T.com, and use promo code SGPN for a 10% deposit bonus. We're also brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Play their fantasy pick'em for a chance to win 100 times your entry in NBA, NHL, college basketball, and more. Sign up today using promo code SGPN to get a 100% deposit match. We're also brought to you by Champs. Run your old March Madness pool and enter Champs free bracket contest for a chance to win $1,000. Go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/champs to enter today. And finally, we're brought to you by Hall of Fame Bets, the sports betting research platform for parlays, player props, and game lines. Download the Hall of Fame Bets app or visit hofbets.com and use promo code SGPN to get 50% off your first month and start making smarter bets today.
Hi-yo, Degenerinos. Welcome to episode 518 of the MMA Gambling Podcast, the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Going out to one of our friends on YouTube, Mario Ho. I enjoy saying your name, and you said we had an amazing and friendly breakdown of Octagon. And that is us to a T. Amazing and friendly, especially my co-host, as he said off air. That's the most friendly guy. Friendliest dude you're ever going to meet. And he's going to be very friendly, giving you winning picks for UFC 299 today. Yes, it's a UFC episode, and yes, it's a big UFC pay-per-view. Had to give the UFC the props. I definitely do the opposite when they give us crappy fight night cards out of the Apex, so I definitely have to give them the respect here. UFC 299 is a banger of a card, as we've mentioned last episode and episodes before when we were peeking ahead at it. But yeah, it's quite a good fight card. Not really any duds among dud fights among the 14 fights that are on the card. So we're going to break down today. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Are you kidding me? Yes. That would be how the math works. Yeah. 5 pay-per-views and then 9 prelims. So I should shut up right now. Bring in my co-host. I haven't given him much to work off, which usually he struggles there. Maybe he'll talk about how great this fight card is too. And then we'll jump right into giving you picks for 9 fights. Hello, Mr. Gumby.
Hey, what's up? So first of all, I'm going to remind you guys that you should subscribe to our YouTube. Always works better when I do it off the top of the show. The little button right below my face right now. And remember that you don't necessarily have to even put notifications on. Just hit subscribe. It will make our life better and will not affect you in any negative way whatsoever. So first of all, thank you all for who have already subscribed. And for those of you who haven't, this is where I call it. Am I supposed to call them cowards? Is that the
running? Yes. Yeah. That's the cowards is what I think the hockey people started that. So
if you don't subscribe, you're a coward. So there you go. And then, as far as this card goes, man, everybody's talking about how great every single fight is. And I agree. And the best part about it for me, too, is not to continue to toot its horn or to give it one more accolade, but the best part about this fight card is every single fight on the card, I think, is somebody looking to take that step forward against somebody looking to defend that spot against somebody else. You know, like, it's not like, you know, a lot of times we get the Dustin Poirier's versus Justin Gaethje's at the top, and while that fight is a great fight and a banger, at the end of the day, one guy loses and moves down one spot in the rankings and the other guy moves up one spot, maybe, or they just stay put. Right. And we usually get like a lot of those like closely contested fights. You know, the Bilal Muhammad versus Sean Brady. It was just like those guys were at the same spot in the rankings. Bilal won. Nobody really moved. And in every single one of these fights, there's somebody looking to take a jump to that next echelon and somebody looking to say, hey, I'm going to try to turn you away there. So that's really exciting for me. I really love that.
Yep, definitely. There is, really, there's maybe one or two fights that you could kind of quibble that that's not the case, but really you could.
I could probably make a bad argument that it is that too.
Yep. No, definitely. I was just going to say it, the opposite side rings true as well. There's really all these fights pretty much have some sort of meeting, which is all we can really ask for, that's all we want, UFC. That's all we want. All right.
Every week, just hit us up with like meaningful fights with fighters we know and love already. Yeah.
Yes. So, every week.
No reason not to do it.
And no short notice. Like this is all like, all these fighters should be ready and willing and properly trained going into this fight night, not fight night, fight card. Because like I said, I'm scrolling through it now, but yeah, there's no short notice. We haven't really even lost too many fights. So this is pretty much how they booked it to begin with. I'm sure they wish this would happen with every fight card, but alas, it does not, because MMA things happen. All right,
that's true. Also, I just did want to fill you in real quick in case you hadn't seen, because there is a fun story out there right now, and it's been confirmed by his management. Mirab Dvalishvili will be there. He will be weighing in, and he will be the replacement fight for that main event. So for those of you wondering if they've got a backup plan, if Marlon Vera happens to fall ill on the scale or something like that, they do, and it's perhaps even a more exciting matchup. So there's that, too.
Hey, they would do that even if O'Malley wasn't going to fight. I'm sure they would make an interim fight with Mirab too, right?
Yeah, I would imagine. Like, he's just there in case they need a B-side. Well, I mean, like, he'd be an A-side against Cheeto, I think, even at this point.
Yeah. Quick turnaround, but it's not like he gets beat up in his fights. So.
or tired.
Mirab could fight. Yeah, he doesn't get tired either. No. Mirab could basically fight every fight card. Maybe that is the solution to making sure all the fight cards are bangers. Just make sure Mirab's on every fight card.
I'm for it.
All right. Let's jump into it. UFC 299 is what we have been dancing around talking about. O'Malley versus Vera 2. And it's going down March 9th in the Kaseya Center, which is in Miami, Florida. For a while there, during the good old quote unquote pandemic days, Florida was one of their key spots, and they are headed back there now. It's their third visit to Miami, but the first since last April, which isn't really that long to wait for a fight card. But all right, let's jump into it with the early prelims. They're on ESPN, ESPN Plus, 6 p.m. Eastern is the start time. We have 5 early prelim fights, so let's dive into her right now. Actually, before we dive in, anything thoughts on the odds just for the prelim fights?
I think top to bottom on this fight card, I found some of the odds surprising, but maybe better lined than I imagined the public was going to be in on. I thought they might list somebody as an underdog and was like, ooh, I'm going to get them as an underdog. And then I think they rightfully had them as favorites. So I think the book surprisingly did a good job here. But I still think there's a bunch of value on a couple of these fights.
Yes, I was happy to find I was in on at least a few dogs on this fight card, which is always nice. But as per usual, the lines have not moved in my favor. They never move in my favor, it seems, over the day or two before we record, from the time I originally look at the lines. But that's first fight. I don't think this line has moved since I checked in on Monday. It would be a women's flyweight fight. Joanne Wood versus Marina Moroz. Did you hear? I guess you probably saw in the Discord. Joanne Wood is retiring apparently after this fight. So
yeah, she actually posted that on Instagram maybe 2 months back. It was right when they announced this fight. There was like a picture of her with John training, and it said getting ready to do this one more time or something like that. And then she changed the caption after that, but it was like pretty well received. That like, oh, okay, she's all done after this one.
I wish she would go by Calderwood Wood. Wouldn't that be much better?
Yeah, Calderwood Wood.
Calderwood Wood. Anyhow, so everyone's alarm bells, spidey senses should be tingling right now. Once a fighter talks about retirement, look out. Anyhow, let's talk about JoJo first. Dr. Neville herself, Joanne Wood, 16-8, 5 knockouts, 1 submission. She's been knocked out, submitted 5 times. She doesn't get knocked out. She gets tapped out. 8-8 in the UFC, 1-3 over her last 4. But she did win her last fight. He's not lost since March of 2022 because she hasn't been active. Used to fight at strawweight, missed weight there. Now she has been a long time flyweight. Yes. 1-1 in the Ultimate Fighter, 4-0 in Invicta, 2012 pro MMA debut, 19-2 in kickboxing, and multiple championships in that realm. More active landing strikes than Rose is in the UFC, better grappling stats than Rose as well, and a very good strike differential. Striking was not her downfall in the UFC. She's plus 2.21 strikes per minute. So she outstrikes her opponents by over 2 strikes per minute during her UFC career. Plus 200 number on her. The Iron Lady, Marina Moroz, 11-5, 1 knockout, 6 submissions. She's been submitted once, 6-5 in the UFC. She's lost 2 straight. Before that, she won 3 straight. Got submitted in her last fight, is not won since March of 2022. Used to fight a strawweight as well. 2013 pro MMA debut, an inch of height, 2 inches of reach over wood. So a slight size advantage, 6 years younger, which is pretty significant. She's been outstruck in the UFC by 0.27 strikes per minute, -225 is the number on her. So basically a striker versus a grappler, I guess you would call it. I guess, Morose, you would consider a grappler, kind of. She gets outstruck. She should be a grappler.
Yeah, but
more submissions than...
Yeah. I agree with you that she's got more submissions and stuff like that, but her numbers on the ground are not particularly good either, right? Like, yeah. Maybe I'm tipping my hand a little bit here. I'm actually going to go dog straight out the gate here.
Okay.
I kind of like Joanne Wood. I know it's a retirement fight and people get all tight on retirement fights and stuff like that and start to worry about them, but I'll just be real honest. I don't really love what I've seen out of Marina Meraz recently. Like her fight with Karina Da Silva, she looked really bad in that fight. And against Jennifer Maia, just having a pace in moving forward for Jennifer Maia was enough to work in that fight. And the thing about Joanne Wood is if she does anything, it's like move forward and cut angles well. And I really like her work in the clinch. I think her work in the clinch probably plays up here. You know, I was going back and watching that fight Joanne Wood had with Luana Dredd, and like she slipped all of her punches and landed big. And, you know, I think Meraz is maybe a touch faster, but she also just doesn't really commit on many of her punches. She's more of a jabber than anything else. Could she go to the grappling? Maybe, but Wood's kind of held up in the clinch and takedown defense as of late too. So, you know, I know it's maybe not a trendy pick to go with the person who's retiring, but I like Joanne Wood in this one. And I especially like the fact that you're getting her at, you know, wildly high odds here.
Yeah, I'm taking Meraz. I was taking her even before I knew about the retirement thing. As you said, she's not looked good recently, but neither has Wood. She did win her last fight against Lana Carolina. But yeah, I don't have much faith in her at this point. And Meraz, she lost to two pretty good fighters, Karina Silva, and who did she lose to before? You mentioned it, and I forget.
She lost to Jennifer Maia, but I also want to send you back to her like badly getting outpointed by Angela Hill. Because if Angela Hill, not that Angela Hill, you know, doesn't have other traits too, but if Angela Hill can outpoint you, this is going to be my further argument for Joanne Wood. I think Joanne Wood.
All right, we shall see. Shant me, that's what I'm trying to say. So anyhow, I'll go with the younger fighter who I have a bit more faith in. Gumby will go with the grizzled veteran who should win the fight on the feet. All right, before we move on and see if we disagree some more, one thing we don't disagree on is cut is a peer-to-peer social betting platform that's US-based and available in 40 states. Peer-to-peer social betting is a new and better way to bet directly against your friends or other users on sports, politics, pop culture, and other events with verifiable outcomes. And they have tons of fun social features that give it the feel of a betting social network. Cut offers lower vig and fully customizable odds. Create your own bets. Cut handles the payment side of things, so you never have to chase anyone down for money. Social features include group chats, betting leaderboards, head-to-head history, user profiles, fan groups, and more. And the rewards are you get your cash back every single time you bet against your friends or other users. I don't believe I can get this in Canada. Gumby, have you seen any bets on Cut that you like? Have you been on Cut recently?
I just think you should always check out that they always have those customizable bets. Like I saw Ryan and Kramer, or Ryan is Kramer, our two bosses rather, both had a +100 bet on who would get the more picks right on Sunday. So you can always play fun things like that as long as they have verifiable outcomes.
Yeah, there you go. So if all that sounds good, and why would it not? Download Cut today in the App Store or over at cut.com, that's KUTT.com, and use promo code SGPN for 10% deposit bonus. We also are big fans of Underdog Fantasy. Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. It's also the fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Pretty easy to do. You pick between 2 and 5 players to build your entry. You pick higher or lower on the various, they have a whole bunch of stat totals for whatever sport you're making picks on, and you can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Simple as that. Gumby and I do our NBA Underdogs articles every day on sportsgamblingpodcast.com. So you can just tag along with us if you like. We're always checking out the odds on there. So check it out. I'm sure you will enjoy it as well. Here's some more stuff that'll make it even more enjoyable for you. Sign up today with promo code MMASGPN and get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant pick'em special. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with Gumby and my promo code, which is MMASGPN. We're in competition with the rest of the shows on the network. So make us look good. MMASGPN. And it's a win-win for you because you get your first deposit doubled up to $100 if you use that code, as well as an instant pick'em special. And you have to be 18 or over and present in the state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-522-4700 or visit www.ncpgambling.org. All right. What are we moving on to now? We're moving on to men's for that. There's one more female fight on the fight card. We're sticking with flyweight. We're going to the men's side. CJ Vergara versus Asu Almabayev. 3 5-minute rounds. Vergara 12-4-1 with 7 knockouts. He's been submitted twice. 3-2 in the UFC. However, he has won 2 straight fights. However, again, he's missed weight 3 times. So keep an eye on that if you're interested in betting. Oh, I guess only if you're interested in betting him. Keep an eye on him on the scales on Friday. 1-0 in contender series. Regional champion, used to fight at bantamweight, 2012 pro MMA debut, 2 inches height, 3 inches reach over Almabayev. More active landing strikes, and he has outstruck his UFC and contender series opponents by a strike exactly per minute, plus 425. The bookies not impressed with your resume. All right, Almabayev, Zulfikar is his nickname. Have we discussed his nickname? I'm sure we have. Do you remember what it is?
Is it some kind of sword or like?
Yes, mounted, you do mounted, remember.
There you go.
It's like a Middle Eastern sword. Yeah, you got it. He's 18-2, 3 knockouts, 9 submissions. He's been submitted once, 1-0 in the UFC. He's won 14 straight fights, 2 straight via submission. He's not lost since April of 2017. That's a long time ago. Was regional champion, used to fight at bantamweight. 2013 was his pro MMA debut. 3 years younger than Vergara, better striking and grappling stats than Vergara. He's only fought once in the UFC, though, so take it with a grain of salt. He outstruck his UFC debut opponent. It was Ode Osborne, correct?
Yeah. Which is that?
Yeah, he outstruck him by 2.69. Yeah, he outstruck him by 2.69 strikes per minute. It wasn't tough enough for Almabayev. Minus 500. Whew. Don't like the number, obviously. Who would like a minus 500 number? But Almabayev is my pick. Just lots of power on the feet and just an incredible grappler as well. So I like him to beat Vergara. I'm not taking a huge wild swing on Vergara here.
Yeah, I'm with you. And the thing about Vergara too is he's lost a couple of times by submission and shown kind of shoddy takedown defense. Like Daniel Lacerda got him down. Actually, Daniel Lacerda, I'm pretty sure, dropped him twice and took him down. And then just as Daniel Lacerda tends to do, forgot to fight. And with all that being said, you know, we're talking about a guy who took down Ode Osborne, who comes from a wrestling background, and did so with pretty much ease and submitted him. Vergara's got issues with his submission defense too. He's been submitted in the past. Yeah. I don't know how you don't go Almabayev here. I think he's going to absolutely wipe the floor with Vergara.
Yep. He is the pick. All right. We're going way up to the big guys now. Heavyweights, Robles Despaigne versus Josh Parisian. Yes. Josh Parisian still in the UFC. All right, Parisian, 15-7, 11 knockouts, 2 submissions. He's been knocked out twice, submitted twice. 2-4 in the UFC. He's lost 2 straight fights, last one via submission. He went 2-0 in contender series, was regional champion, 2014 pro MMA debut, plus 265. Despaigne, he's the bad boy. 4-0 with 4 knockouts. This is his UFC debut. He won a bronze medal in Taekwondo in the Olympics. He's 3 inches tall in Parisian, 8 inches reach on him. He's 6'7". Minus 300 is the number.
Yeah, he's 6'7" with like 7'2" reach or something like that, if I'm remembering correct. It's wild. I'm going to go with Despaigne, but here's the thing. I think if you're putting together some of the parlays with some of the bigger numbers here, I think you'd leave Despaigne out. Because while I do, you know, his striking skills are right up there. You know, like he's a low hands guy, but when you're a low hands guy with like, you know, a billion inches of reach, like maybe that's not the biggest worry, right? Because you can hit them before they can hit you anyway. I really like his striking skills. His power is obvious. His last 3 fights have taken a combined 21 seconds. There's a lot of things to like about Despaigne, but he is a 4-0 pro. He's a 4-0 pro whose wrestling has not really been challenged. Like I saw him try to defend 1 takedown. It didn't look great. It looked kind of like a 3-fight professional would be defending. So like there's a question about what happens if Parisian does get in on takedowns, if Parisian does get his legs. what if he's just that guy who panics? What if he's just that guy who has no answer to a takedown like that? So for me, you know, and I'm all for, you know, people who think, you know, grab a whole bunch of these favorites, put them together, get some plus money on a parlay. I think that's a great idea. I just think I stay away from Despaigne in this one. You know, if you want to try some like early props, you know, you like Despaigne knockout first round or something like that, something to make it look a little fancier, by all means. But I just don't think like hinge all your parlays on a guy here who has a lot of questions.
Yeah, Despaigne is my pick as well. They're giving him a good entry fight, that's for sure, against Josh Parisian. Speaking of props, I don't see a lot of props posted yet. Is it just me, or are you finding props for any of these fights?
You got to look in the right places.
Okay, good. When we get to prop time next episode, I'll make sure
you got the right spots. Yeah.
All right. Let's move up to. Should we move up or should we? Yeah, one more fight. Then I'll tell you about some more friends of ours. Middleweights, Michelle Pereira, aka Michael Pereira, is what I've heard him called recently, right?
McCall. Yeah, McCall.
No, I heard him called Michael on another show I listened to. Anyhow, Michelle Pereira versus Michael Olasechuk.
You're getting better at the Polish names. Look at you.
Yes. Well, Olasechuk's been around long enough. I'm not going to butcher his. Hopefully, I wouldn't butcher his now.
You still mess up Karolina Kovalkiewicz.
That's true. Karolina Kovalkiewicz. She disappeared for a while, though, to be fair. Yeah. Okay. And she's not a hustler either. Hussar. I don't think a woman would want to be called a hustler. Anyhow, this hustler is 19-6 with one no contest, 14 knockouts, one submission, been knocked out once, submitted four times, 7-4 with one no contest in the UFC. He's gone 3-1 over his last four. He won his last fight via TKO. He failed a drug test in the past. Used to fight at 205. Regional champion, has missed weight at middleweight before, so keep an eye on that. 2014 pro MMA debut, an inch of reach, 2 years younger than Pereira. I mean, has outstruck his UFC opponents by 0.95 strikes a minute. He's at +130. Pereira, Demolidor. I don't know why I have trouble saying that, but Demolisher, obviously. Proper nickname for him. 29-11 with two no contests, 11 knockouts, 7 submissions. He's been knocked out once, submitted once. So durable dude. 7-2 in the UFC, 6-0 over his last six, obviously. Won his last one via TKO. He's not lost since February 2020. Used to fight at welterweight. He missed weight twice there, though. So now he's rightfully a middleweight. Was a regional champion, 2011 pro MMA debut. Inch of height over Olasechuk. Better grappling stats, and he's outstruck his UFC opponents by 1.35 strikes per minute. -148. I like Pereira here. I like the number I'm getting on Pereira here. To be fair, Olasechuk has looked good recently. But yeah, I think there's levels, and I think Pereira's on a different level than Olasechuk, especially on the feet. So give me the Demolisher.
I'm going to offer you an alternative reason to really like Pereira in here, because I too like Pereira, and I really like the number as well. You're right. I think he's way better on the feet. I think, you know, that video game-esque Michelle Pereira button mashing from the early days of when he was in the UFC doing moonsaults and stuff like that, it seems over, right? When he lost to Tristan Connolly. I think his loss to Tristan Connolly is the best thing that happened to his career. His loss to Tristan Connolly has completely changed him into a new man, a guy who, you know, kind of goes in there surgically. But also, I will say, one of the sleeper good aspects of Pereira's game that I don't think enough people pay attention to is he's a good wrestler. Like, mm-hmm. he is a legitimately good wrestler. And we saw it when he beat Chaos Williams. He took Chaos Williams down and beat him up a bunch of times. Obviously, this first fight at middleweight when he went in and just absolutely steamrolled Andre Petrosky was a huge selling point for me. You know, who knows what he's like at middleweight? The sky's the limit now that he's no longer cutting so much weight and he's probably going to have better cardio. But I think if he brings that wrestling game here, I don't think it's out of the question for him to submit Michael Olasechuk, who has had trouble with jiu-jitsu in the past. I think many people would be wildly surprised that anybody's even talking about that, but his takedown game is exceptional, and Olasechuk has shown a huge issue with that in the past and been submitted a bunch. And I think people forget, although it wasn't a grapple-heavy fight for Pereira, he does have a recent submission win, right? Like, he beat, Zadim, it was the Russian dude, Zadim something. He got rear-naked choked by Michel Pereira. So, like, I think Pereira by submission is sort of a sleepy play here. But yeah, even if you just like the money line at -148, there's definitely value there.
All right, there. Yeah, especially. Yeah, speaking of props, there you go. Gumby's giving you a prop here, but yeah, Oleksychuk probably would prefer the fight. Well, definitely he would prefer the fight to be standing. And now that Pereira is not as much of a madman, he may exactly do what Gumby is saying and take this fight to the ground. All right, before we move on, let me talk about Champs. Champs is hosting a free March Madness bracket contest, for a chance to win $1,000. Plus, if you host your own March Madness pool on Champs, you get an extra free entry into the bracket contest. Tiebreakers are determined by who enters first, so make sure to register now so you don't miss out. Here's what you got to do: head to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/champs. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/champs. And we're brought to you by Hall of Fame Bets. Win bigger by betting smarter this NBA season with Hall of Fame Bets, the sports betting analytics platform for parlays, player props, and game lines. Research every NBA and soccer bet with historical stats and data. Enter any parlay idea into Hall of Fame Bets revolutionary parlay optimizer tool to get hit rates broken down by leg, as well as an expected probability for the entire parlay. Sort all players by hit rate for any bet to learn which players are hot and which picks have value. Stop betting in the dark and join over 30,000 users researching with Hall of Fame Bets to craft more intelligent, data-driven parlays. Download the Hall of Fame Bets app or visit hofbets.com and use code SGPN for 50% off your first month today. Start researching, start winning with Hall of Fame Bets. All right, main event of the early prelims, light heavyweights. Jan Kudalaba versus Felipe Lins. Lins, we'll start with first. Monstro is the nickname. He is 17-5, 9 knockouts, 4 submissions. He's been knocked out 4 times. 3-2 in the UFC. He's won 3 straight fights. However, he's not fought since last June, so a little less than a year at this point. Has not lost since June of 2020. Used to fight at heavyweight. Went 4-0 in PFL and was the champion there. That was, I believe, at heavyweight, right? Am I correct there?
Yeah, I believe he's heavyweight champ because he fought heavyweight when he came back over to the UFC.
Right. Yep. Now he is having some success at 205. He went 3-3 in Bellator, 2005 pro MMA debut. He's been outstruck in the UFC by 0.14 strikes per minute. Inch height, 3 inches, reach over Kudalaba. And he's at +115. Kudalaba is the Hulk. 17-9-1 with 1 no contest, 13 knockouts, 2 submissions. He's been knocked out 3 times, submitted 4 times. 6-8-1 in the UFC, 1-3 over his last 4, but he did win his last fight via TKO. Used to fight at heavyweight as well. 8 years younger than Lins, better striking stats, better grappling stats, more active landing strikes. And he's outstruck his opponents in the UFC by 1.37 strikes per minute, -130, so slight favorite here.
I'm gonna kick it with a dog here again. I'm gonna close the early prelims with another dog. I like Felipe Lins in this fight for a number of reasons. Number one, he's looked exceptional since going down to light heavyweight. The wins against Marcin Procneo, Ovince St. Preux, Maxim Grishin, pick whatever fight you want to talk about with him in that run. And he's looked exceptional, both in his ability to put people away, which he used to do at heavyweight all the time and then kind of stopped, but also his ability to fight for 15 hard minutes. Like, he looks good at the beginning of those fights. He looks good at the end of those fights. And, yeah, maybe Marcin Procneo is not the best guy to gauge that kind of fight with. But, like, maybe neither is Jan Kudalaba, right? Like, maybe the biggest issue with Jan Kudalaba is he comes out like a bat out of hell and just completely runs out of gas. You know, I'm reminded of that Dustin Jacoby fight, where he clearly took a 10-8 first round, basically had Jacoby knocked out, and then couldn't fight for 2 rounds. Just got absolutely obliterated in rounds 2 and 3. And Lins is both extremely durable and has shown excellent cardio and the ability to keep himself safe. So, yeah, why wouldn't I love Felipe Lins in this fight, especially at dog money?
Yeah, I like Lins as well. He's basically, like as Gumby said, looked real good recently. He seems to have found a good home at light heavyweight, and he's good. He's pretty much solid everywhere. Good striker, good on the ground. Kudalaba, I don't think is going to be able to out wrestle him. So yeah, let's get some dog money there together, shall we?
All right. And if Kudalaba tries to wrestle him too, he's going to tire himself right out. Like there will be nothing left of Kudalaba in round 2 if he tries to wrestle in round 1.
Yep, very good point. All right, let's jump to the main prelims, ESPN, ESPN Plus, just like the early prelims, 8 p.m. start time. Bantamweights, Pedro Munhoz versus Kyler Phillips. Munhoz, the young Punisher, incorrect. He's not young anymore. 20-8 with 2 no contests, 5 knockouts, 8 submissions, never been finished in a fight. 10-8 with 2 no contests in the UFC. 1-3 with one no contest over his last five. He did lose his last fight, was regional champion, 2009 pro MMA debut, more active landing strikes than Phillips. He's been outstruck by 0.6969 strikes per minute in the UFC, plus 200. Matrix, Kyler Phillips' nickname, aka Galaxy Brain. 11-2, five knockouts, two submissions. Never been finished in a fight as well. These guys owe us finishes. 5-1 in the UFC, 2-0 over his last two, 6-1 over his last seven. Has not fought since last August. Has not lost since July of 2021. Has Phillips been out longer than, was it just last August or was it August 2022? I feel like he's been out a long time. Let me check. No, it was last August. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So I shouldn't have even mentioned it because it's been less than a year. Anyhow, he's not lost since July of 2021. That's impressive. What else can I tell you? 1-0 in the contender series, 0-1 in the Ultimate Fighter, 2 inches taller than Munoz, 7 inches reach on him, 9 years younger than the young Punisher somehow. Better striking and grappling stats. He's outstruck his UFC opponents by 2 strikes per minute, minus 210. Give me the younger fighter in Phillips, not just younger, bigger, better all around. I think we've already seen the best that we're going to see from the young Punisher at this point. He's definitely on the downswing. Give me Phillips.
Is he on the downswing though? I'm going to buck that a little
he
bit.
Fights, yeah. He fights tough people all the time. So
he won round one against Marlon Vera in his last fight out. He was the last person to take a round off of Chito Vera. How about we go with that? And now Chito's going to be fighting for the title.
There's some spin there. Holy moly.
Yeah. We'll take some spin. But meanwhile, Kyler Phillips is a guy struggling with Rayony Barcelos, right? Like he couldn't deal with the wrestling of Rayony
Barcelos.
I am. I'm going to take Pedro Munoz. I think the leg kicks here play up. I think Kyler Phillips is kind of shoddy wrestling picks up because, like, you know, Kyler Phillips has looked really good in some fights. Like, I'll give you the Song Yadong fight, right? He beat Song Yadong all the way back in 2021 when Song Yadong was like, I don't know. Do we keep kind of guessing at how old Song Yadong is or do we actually know now? Because when he came to the UFC, they were like, he's 12. And we're like, I don't know if he's 12. But anyway, he beat Song Yadong back when he was 9 and immediately followed that up by getting badly out-wrestled by Rylian Paiva. And since then, all he's fought in the last 3 years, almost 3 full years, has been Marcelo Rojo on short notice and Rayony Barcelos, who's 100 years old. And he didn't really look that good against Barcelos either. So, you know, like we're talking about in his last 3 fights, a rough fight with Rayony Barcelos, losing to Rylian Paiva, who's no longer in the UFC, and, you know, beating Marcelo Rojo, who's also still not in the UFC. So while he's looked better, I don't trust his level of competition, and I certainly don't trust the fact that he's been taken down by most of those people. So I don't trust his wrestling here, and I think if he's forced to trade on the feet with Pedro Munoz, I think Munoz is a little bit craftier. As long as his cardio holds up, I think he's going to piece up Kyler Phillips. And at plus 200, I definitely think he's going to piece up Kyler Phillips.
I hope everyone caught all the different fighters who caught strays there from Gumby.
I love Marcelo Rojo, but he's not in the UFC anymore. He's the one.
Julian Paiva, Rayony Barcelos.
Remember the TX arms?
Oh, yes. There was at least 3 fighters that caught some strays there from Gumby. All right. We are differing on not quite a few fights. What, 2? 2 fights. That is quite a few for us. All right. Let's move on. See if we differ 2. Here. Lightweights. 2. I don't think we're going to differ here, but who's to say? Lightweights, Matias Gamrot versus Rafael Dos Anjos. Dos Anjos back down to lightweight. He's 32, Dos Anjos, 32-15, 5 knockouts, 11 submissions. He's been knocked out 4 times, 21-13 in the UFC. Used to be the lightweight champion of the world. Lost, win, loss over his last 3. Has fought at welterweight recently, 2004 pro MMA debut. He's a grappling world champion, more active landing strikes than Gamrot. He's outstruck his UFC opponents by 0.33 strikes per minute. He's at plus 350. Gamrot, gamer, 23-2 with 1 no contest, 8 knockouts, 5 submissions, never been finished in a fight, 6-2 in the UFC. He's won 2 straight and 6 of 7. Used to fight at featherweight, multiple region championships on his
mantle.
Finally, I get to say it. Correct. Get the shirt. SportsGamblingPodcast.com/store. 2012 pro MMA. Already did that. 2 inches of height over Dos Anjos. 6 years younger. But Gamrot's not really as young as we think, though. Better striking stats than Dos Anjos. He's been outstriking the UFC by 0.2 strikes per minute, -325. Gumby, are we taking Gamrot?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Gamrot here. I think, first of all, I really hate RDA down at lightweight at 39
nice.
Years old.
Hate RDA?
Oh. No,
you
going down
you
the
continued peck- your sentence.
Yeah. You just cut me off because you're lagging a little bit. No, this is terrible for him. There's no reason for this man to be at lightweight. And the last time he was down at lightweight did not look good. You know, he fought Rafael Fiziev. That was his last fight at lightweight. I mean, like, I guess the Paul Felder fight in 2020 was the last time he looked good at lightweight. and like, that's not a good sign. And like, if you look at all of his losses, you know, as sort of up a weight class, it's a lot of guys who could kind of push him around and take him down between, you know, Kamaru Usman and, you know, Michael Chiesa and, you know, Vicente Luque. They're like people who could body him up. And that's the thing about Gamrot is he could do the same thing. Like, what's to stop him from doing that at lightweight? And then on top of that, we're going to add gas tank issues on the 39-year-old Dos Anjos. So as much as I love RDA and I wish, you know, I could continue to see him have a real career, going back down to lightweight at this time is just not it. And I think Gamrot, despite being, you know, a little bit older, like you said, he's not like a prospect. This is his step up fight, and I think he's ready for it.
Yep, Gamrot is my pick as well. Yeah, he just turned 33, so he'd be 34 in December. So yeah, not exactly an up-and-comer, especially for a lightweight. But yeah, he's still 6 years younger than Dos Anjos. At this point, just better all around than Dos Anjos as well. So Gamrot is the pick. All right, we're going to move to women's flyweight once again. Caitlin Sermonera, a.k.a. Caitlin Chookagian versus Macy Barber. We'll tell you about the blonde fighter first. She didn't change her nickname, changed her last name, didn't change her nickname. 18-5, 2 knockouts, 1 submission. She's been knocked out twice. 11-5 in the UFC, 4-1 over her last five, including losing her last fight. She's not fought since October of 2022. Gumby, let me know. She's having some issues trying to get pregnant, health issues that goes along with that. So not the greatest time off for her. Something to keep in mind here. Not to be callous about it, but, you know, something to keep in mind if you're making picks here. She's missed weight before in the past. Last win was May of 2022. Used to fight up at bantamweight, down at strawweight. She has multiple regional championships on her
mantle.
Correct. Get the shirt at sportsgamblingpodcast.com/store. Now we're on a run. Multiple regional championships coming up. 2014 pro on May debut. 4 inches height, 3 inches reach over Barber. She's been she has outstruck her opponents in the UFC by 0.18 strikes per minute, +170. Gumby's favorite. This isn't really a joke anymore, Macy, the future Barber, because you don't really hate her like you used to, or at least you respect how she's been fighting, correct?
I think I dislike her personally more than I dislike her fighting style now. Yeah. I don't even know what that means.
It means it's an improvement over it used to be. We would have been talking about this months leading up to this fight, but it's kind of snuck up on us because Gumby, the hate has died down a bit. Anyhow, the future Macy Barber, 6 knockouts, 2 submissions, never been finished in a fight. 8-2 in the UFC. She's won 5 straight fights, including her last one via TKO. Has not lost since February of 2021. Used to fight at strawweight as well. 10 years younger than Sermonera. Better striking stats. She's outstruck her UFC opponents by 1.88 strikes per minute, -200. Long episode. I'm butchering things up now. Barber obviously is the pick here. This is a bad matchup for Sermonera, especially being off for so long, having some health issues, a much younger fighter, a vicious fighter, a fighter that's going to actually bring it to her. She won't be point fighting like Sermonera likes to do. She's going to have trouble doing her hayas and kayas and whatever she says when she strikes, because Barber's going to be all over her like stink on a Gumby. So yeah, Barber's the pick.
Yeah, I think I said after Barber's last win that she looked much better. And the thing particularly is, you know, pushing the action, getting physical, because one of the things is she would kind of do the Caitlin Sermonera or Chookagian, or like she would do that, like point fighting, making noise from distance. Yep. And then she changed it up. She got in people's face. She like pushed the action. She's looking better doing it. And so I think that with that, Macy Barber is able to use her physical tools better. And I know after her last fight, I was like, look, she looks so much better. I'm still not sure she's ready to beat any of those people in like the top five. And I'm almost positive. I have to go back, or, you know, if anybody has the clip ready to go, let me know. I'm almost positive I said the only one I really think she could beat was Caitlin Chookagian. And it's just the fact of the matter that Sermonara, she goes to her back. Like when she gets taken down, she goes to her back and she's content with trying submissions. None of her strikes look like they've ever done any damage. You know, no offense to Sermonara, but just like they don't. They look like they land and touch you, but don't do much else. And, you know, for me, I think that's a nightmare against Barbara, because the thing Barbara does the best is damage. And I think that's going to be great for the judges' scorecards here. Give me Macy Barber.
Macy the Damage Barber? I guess
she does train with Elkins. She does train with Elkins now.
Oh, really? Well, yeah, there you go. I must have known.
She cross trains at Alpha Male, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's right. Another reason for you to enjoy her even more. Maybe Elkins has got to retire eventually. Maybe he'll pass along the nickname. But yeah.
No, he doesn't.
No, I guess he doesn't. True. It's not like he gets damaged ever. It's true. All right. Speaking to Gumby's point about Sermonara not really doing damage, we're talking two knockouts, one submission in 23 fights. So yeah, it's an issue when you're going against someone like Macy Barber. She's not going to be scared at all. Macy Barber's not going to be scared at all. What will be coming back on her? All right. We're going to the main event. This could be a main event of any fight night card. It's a heavyweight fight. Curtis Blaydes versus Gilton Almeida, our boy, tentatively. Our boy still. Well, I guess I'm more off him than Gumby is. Let's tell you about Mahadino first, Mr. Almeida. 20-2, 7 knockouts, 12 submissions. He's been knocked out once. 6-0 in the UFC. He's won 15 straight fights. He's not lost since January of 2018. He's fight at a whole bunch of weight classes. Welterweight, middleweight, light heavyweight, and now he's up at heavyweight. Multiple major championships on his
mantle.
Correct. Get that shirt. sportsgamingpodcast.com/store. I told you we're on a run. He's been around since 2012. He has better grappling stats than Blaydes, which is not something you say too often in Curtis Blaydes matchups. He's outstruck his UFC opponents by 2.26 strikes per minute, plus 100. So even money on our boy. Curtis Blaydes, Razor Blaydes, 17-4 with one no contest, 12 knockouts. He's been knocked out 4 times. So kill or be killed, basically. 12-4 with one no contest in the UFC. 3-1 over his last 4. He got TKO'd in his last fight. 2014 Pro MMA debut. He was a junior college wrestling All-American, or champion, actually, not just an All-American. Inch reach over Almeida, 27 pounds heavier than him based on their last weigh-ins for the last fights. So that could be something to keep in mind here, making picks here. He's more active landing strikes, and he's got a positive strike differential of plus 1.67, minus 105. All right, Gumby, let's finish it off.
I'm going with Gilton. I know people got off of him, but like, why did people get off of him in his last fight? Right.
It's just because it was boring. That's all. It was effective. Because,
right. He didn't get after trying to finish Derek Lewis on the ground. Instead, he just floated in positions, held him down, put him in bad spots. And did he occasionally let him up? Sure. But my point is his wrestling looks so good. I think he's going to stuff a ton of what Curtis Blaydes throws his way in wrestling, and sort of Curtis Blaydes' biggest problem anyway, and this is notoriously over his full career, his biggest problem has always been that he has been slow to wrestle, that it sometimes takes him too long to get to it. You know, like if you want to go back to that Derek Lewis fight, like he didn't shoot the takedown early enough. And then, so then when Lewis got his hands on him, it was obvious he was about to shoot, and he hit him with an uppercut. You know, you could say that same thing about his fight with, was it Volkov who got him last time? I think it was Volkov who got him last time. It was the same thing. It was just like, I need him to shoot. 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 And now he's been knocked out. And like, I've always trusted that his takedowns were, it was Pavlovich, not Volkov. Sorry, wrong Russian. Oh. It's the same thing, though. It's like I keep wanting to believe that he will know better and shoot right away. And then in this fight, I'm not even sure that helps, right? Like, I'm not even sure that that's the outlet, because I'm not sure he can get there. I, I think he's going to be forced to strike with Jelton. I also think Jelton's better at jiu-jitsu. So I think if we see a situation where Blades does land some takedowns, I think we could see some sweeps, some scrambles, some possible chokes out of Almeida. He's done grappling competitions before and been very good in them. So, like, yeah, I like the dog money on Almeida here.
Yeah, I am taking our boy as well, Jelton Almeida. How do you see this fight? What do you think the most common outcome of the fight, or what type of fight are we going to see here?
I think the most likelihood is going to be a Jelton Almeida knockout. You know, you mentioned Curtis Blades has been knocked out 4 or 5 times. I'm not sure how his chin looks on the feet. Like, if you want to go back, like I said, the Derek Lewis fight's a big one. The Pavlovich one's a big one. Almeida has shown that kind of knockout power on the feet when he wants to. And it's not like he has to be worried by a particularly nuanced striker coming back to him too, right? Because Curtis Blades, not particularly nuanced when it comes to his boxing and stuff like that. Yeah, he knocked out Chris Daugherty, but like, I don't know so much that plays against Jelton Almeida. So yeah, give me Almeida here. I think he peppers him on the feet. I think you could see him sort of take over as the damage builds up and Blades kind of just quits on the feet too. You know, I think there's a lot of scenarios there for Almeida.
Yep. An older fighter. Actually, Almeida, they're the same age, I think, but obviously, Blades is getting some wear on the tires at this point. All right, let's recap this episode, and then we'll get back in your ears tomorrow with the main card. We both are in on Almeida, Barber, Gamrot. Gumby likes Munoz. I like Phillips. We both like Linz, Paheya, Despagne, Albayev. Gumby likes Joanne Wood. I like Marina Moroz. All right, check us out in the Discord, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/discord. Check us out on the Twitter, SGPN MMA, Gumby Vreeland, Jeff Fox Writer. If you're on YouTube, you can see our handles underneath their names. Gumby is always innovating, aren't you? Right,
yeah,
there.
I'm good at what I do. Yeah.
He sure is. What else are we, where can we be found that we are good? YouTube, obviously. Make sure you subscribe. At the very least, subscribe. And even better, if you want to watch, that's even better. Get in my pick'em contest and read all my other MMA writing at moneymma.substack.com. Gumby's got a very good episode of Top Turtle this week. Both of your guests are delightful. Tell the people who they are.
Yeah, so I got some flack on Twitter for not having any UFC 299 guests, which I did try, but they fell through. One of them fell through, at least.
That's Twitter for you, though, right?
Yeah, they it's free, and you should enjoy it. No, but I talked to Char Lampros Grigoriou, who is fighting next week at UFC Vegas 88. Very entertaining dude, and he loves him some Ray Longo, so that's fun, too. And then later on, I talked to Jakob Kashuba, who is fighting, depending on when you're listening to this, he may have already fought for PFL Europe on Thursday. Right. He was last year's champion, and he's back at it again this year looking for another 100K.
Both very nice guys, very good interviews. So people who are giving you a hard time just haven't listened yet. If they listen, they won't be disappointed for sure. And then, of course, sportsgamblingpodcast.com, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/Patreon, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/store. We'll be back tomorrow. Blonde fighter Jeff Fox, the future Gumby Vreeland. We will talk to you and hopefully see you then. Bye.